Welcome back to the Book Club Commune with me, your host, Ivy Poese. Today we're going to be reading three really short works by Mao: Combat Liberalism, The Chinese People Will Not Be Cowed by the Atom Bomb, and U.S. Imperialism is a Paper Tiger. These are all really short works. Each one took like less than 10 minutes each. One of them took only 3 minutes. So yeah, I just decided to record all three of them real quick and put them all together in one episode. It didn't make sense to release an episode that was only 3 minutes long. I guess 5 minutes with intro and outro, but still didn't make sense. So yeah, this is just going to be three parts. If you're not interested in one of the three, just skip around. I don't care. Use it as you will. With that being said, let's get into this. Combat Liberalism, the 7th of September, 1937. We stand for active ideological struggle because it is the weapon for ensuring unity within the party and the revolutionary organizations in the interest of our fight. Every communist and revolutionary should take up this weapon. But liberalism rejects ideological struggle and stands for unprincipled peace, thus giving rise to a decadent Philistine attitude and bringing about political degeneration in certain units and individuals in the party and the revolutionary organizations. Liberalism manifests itself in several ways. To let things slide for the sake of peace and friendship when a person has clearly gone wrong and refrain from principled argument because he is an old acquaintance, a fellow townsman, a schoolmate, a close friend, a loved one, an old colleague, or old subordinate, or to touch on the matter lightly instead of going through it thoroughly, so as to keep on good terms. The result is that both the organization and the individual are harmed. This is one type of liberalism. To indulge in irresponsible criticisms in private instead of actively putting forward one suggestion into the organization. To say nothing to people to their faces, but to gossip behind their back, or to say nothing at a meeting, but to gossip afterwards, to show no regard at all for the principles of collective life, but to follow one's own inclination. This is the second type. To let things drift as if they do not affect one personally, to say little as possible when knowing perfectly well what is wrong, to be worldly wise and to play safe and seek only to avoid blame. This is a third type. Not to obey orders, but to give pride of place in one's own opinions, to demand special consideration from the organization, but to reject its discipline. This is a fourth type. To indulge in personal attacks, pick quarrels, vent personal spite, or seek revenge, instead of entering into an argument and struggling against incorrect views for the sake of unity, or progress, or getting the work done properly. This is a fifth type. To hear incorrect views without rebutting them, and even to hear counter-revolutionary remarks without reporting them, but instead to take them calmly as if nothing had happened. This is a sixth type. To be among the masses and fail to conduct propaganda and agitation, or to speak at a meeting, or conduct investigations and inquiries among them, and to instead be indifferent to them and show no concern for their well-being, forgetting that one is a communist and behaving as if they were an ordinary non-communist. This is a seventh type. To see someone harming the interests of the masses and yet not feel indignant or dissuade or stop him or reason with him, but to allow him to continue. This is an eighth type. To work half-heartedly without a definite plan or direction. To work perfunctorily and meddle along. So long as one remains a monk, one goes on tolling the bell. This is a ninth type. To regard oneself as having rendered great service to the revolution, to pride oneself on being a veteran, to disdain minor assignments while being quite unequal to major tasks, to be slipshod in work and slack in study. This is a tenth type. To be aware of one's own mistake and yet make no attempt to correct them, taking a liberal attitude towards oneself. This is an 11th type. We could name more, but these 11 are the principal types. They are all manifestations of liberalism. Liberalism is extremely harmful in a revolutionary collective. It is a corrosive which eats away unity, undermines cohesion, and causes apathy and creates dissension. It robs the revolutionary ranks of compact organization and strict discipline, prevents policies from being carried through, and alienates the party organizations from masses which the party leads. It is extremely It is an extremely bad tendency. Liberalism stems from petty bourgeois selfishness, and it places personal interests first and interests of the revolution second, and this gives rise to ideological, political, and organizational liberalism. People who are liberals look upon the principles of Marxism as abstract dogma. They approve of Marxism, but are not prepared to practice it in full. They are not prepared to place it in their replace their liberalism with Marxism. These people have their Marxism, but they have their liberalism as well. They talk Marxism, but practice liberalism. They apply Marxism to others, but liberalism to themselves. They keep both kinds of goods in stock and find a use for each. This is how the minds of certain people work. Liberalism is a manifestation of opportunism and conflicts fundamentally with Marxism. It is a negative and objectively has the effect of helping the enemy. That is why the enemy welcomes its preservation in our midst. Such being its nature, there should be no place for it in the ranks of the revolution. We must use Marxism, which is positive in spirit, to overcome liberalism, which is negative. A communist should have the largeness of mind, and he should be staunch and active, looking upon the interests of the revolution as his very life, subordinating his personal interests to those of the revolution. Always and everywhere, he should adhere to principle and wage a tireless struggle against all incorrect ideas and actions, so as to consolidate the collective life of the party and strengthen the ties between the party and the masses. He should be more concerned about the party and the masses than about any private person, and more concerned about others than about himself. Only thus can he be considered a communist. All loyal, honest, active, and upright communists must unite to oppose all liberal tendencies shown by certain people among us, and set them down on the path. This is one of the tasks on our ideological front. The Chinese people cannot be cowed by the atom bomb. The 28th of January, 1955. Main points of a conversation with Ambassador Carl Johan K. Sundstrom, the first Finnish envoy to China, when he presented his credentials. China and Finland are friendly countries. Our relations are based on the five principles of peaceful coexistence. China and Finland have never come into conflict. In the past, China's wars with European countries were only with Britain, France, Germany, Tsarist Russia, Italy, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and Holland. These countries all came afar to commit aggressions against China, as in the invasions by the Anglo-French Allied forces and by the Allied forces of the eight powers, including the United States and Japan. 16 countries took part in the war of aggression against Korea, including Turkey and Luxembourg. All these aggressor countries claimed to be peace-loving, while branding Korea and China as aggressors. Today, the danger of a world war and threats to China can come mainly from the warmongers in the United States. They have occupied our Taiwan and the Taiwan Straits and are contemplating an atomic war. We have two principles. First, we don't want war. Second, we will strike back resolutely if anyone invades us. This is what we teach the members of the Communist Party and the nation as a whole. The Chinese people are not to be cowed by the U.S. atomic blackmail. Our country has a population of 600 million and an area of 9,600,000 square kilometers. The United States cannot completely annihilate the Chinese nation with a small stack of atom bombs. Even if the U.S. atom bombs were so powerful that, when dropped on China, they would make a hole right through the earth, or even blow it up, that would hardly mean a thing to the universe as a whole, though it might be a major event for the solar system. We have an expression, millet plus rifles. In the case of the United States, it is planes plus the atom bomb. However, if the United States, with its planes plus atom bombs, is to launch a war of aggression against China, then China, with its millets plus rifles, is sure to emerge the victor. The people of the whole world will support us. As a result of the First World War, the Tsar, the landlords, the capitalists in Russia were wiped out. As a result of the Second World War, Chiang Kai-shek and the landlords were overthrown in China, and the East European countries and a number of countries in Asia were liberated. Should the United States launch a third world war, were it to last 8 or 10 years, the result would have been the elimination of the ruling class in the United States. Britain, and the other accomplice countries in the transformation of most of the world into countries led by communist parties. World wars cannot end in favor of the warmongers, but in favor of the communist parties and the revolutionary people in all lands. If the warmongers are to make war, then they mustn't blame us for making revolution or engaging in subversive activities, as they keep saying all the time. If they desist from war, they can survive a little longer on this earth. But the sooner they make war, the sooner they will be wiped from the face of the earth. Then a People's United Nations will be set up. Maybe in Shanghai, maybe somewhere in Europe, or maybe set up again in New York, provided the U.S. warmongers have been wiped out. For instance, if it has 10 fangs, knock off one the first time, and there will be 9 left. Knock off another, and there will be 8 left. But when the fangs are gone, it will still have claws. If we deal with it step by step in earnest, we shall certainly succeed in the end. Strategically, we must utterly despise U.S. imperialism. Tactically, we must take it seriously. In struggling against it, we must take each battle, each encounter seriously. At present, the United States is powerful, but when looked in a broader perspective as a whole, and from long-term viewpoint, it has no popular support. Its policies are disliked by the people, and because it oppresses and exploits them. For this reason, the tiger is doomed. Therefore, it is nothing to be afraid of and can be despised. But today, the United States still has strength, shipping out more than 100 million tons of steel a year and hitting out everywhere. That is why we must continue to wage struggles against it, fight it with all our might, and wrest one position after another from it. And that takes time. It seems that countries of the Americas, Asia, and Africa will have to go on quarreling for the United States till the very end, till the paper tiger is destroyed by the wind and rain. To oppose U.S. imperialism, the people of European origin in Latin American countries should unite with the indigenous Indians. Perhaps the white immigrants from Europe can be divided into two groups, one composed of rulers and the other of ruled. This should make it easier for the group of oppressed white people to get close to the local people, for their position is the same. Our friends in Latin America, Asia, and Africa are in the same position as we, and are doing the same kind of work, and doing something for the people to lessen their oppression by imperialism. If we do a good job, we can root out imperialist oppression. In this, we are comrades. At the same time, we are of the same nature as you in our opposition to imperialist oppression, differing only in geographical position, nationality, and language. But we are different in nature from imperialism, and the very sight of us, it makes us sick. What use is imperialism? The Chinese people will have none of it, nor will the people in the rest of the world. There is no reason for the existence of imperialism. U.S. imperialism is a paper tiger. The 14th of July, 1956. Part of a talk with two Latin American public figures. The United States is flaunting the anti-communist banner everywhere in order to perpetrate aggression against other countries. The United States owes debt everywhere. It owes debt not only to the countries of Latin America, Asia, and Africa, but also to countries of Europe and Oceania. The whole world, Britain included, dislikes the United States. The masses of the people dislike it. Japan dislikes the United States because it oppresses her. None of the countries of the East is free from U.S. aggression. The United States has invaded our Taiwan province. Japan, Korea, the Philippines, Vietnam, and Pakistan all suffer from U.S. aggression, although some of them are allies of the United States. The people are dissatisfied, and in some countries, so are the authorities. All oppressed nations want independence. Everything is subject to change. The big decadent forces will give way to new small-born forces. The small forces will change into big forces because the majority of the people demand this change. The U.S. imperialist forces will change from big to small because the American people, too, are dissatisfied with their government. In my own lifetime, I, myself, have witnessed such changes. Some of us present were born in the Qing Dynasty and others after the 1911 Revolution. The Qing Dynasty was overthrown long ago. By whom? By the party led by Sun Yat-sen, together with the people. Sun Yat-sen's forces were so small that the Qing officials did not take him seriously. He led many uprisings which failed each time. In the end, however, it was Sun Yat-sen who brought down the Qing dynasty. Bigness is nothing to be afraid of. The big will be overthrown by the small. The small will become big. After overthrowing the Qing dynasty, Sun Yat-sen met with defeat, for he failed to satisfy the demands of the people, such as their demands for land in opposition to imperialism. Nor did he understand the necessity of suppressing the counter-revolutionaries who were moving about freely. Later, he suffered defeat at the hands of Yun Shikai, chieftain of the northern warlords. Yun Shikai's forces were larger than Sun Yat-sen's. But here again, this law operated. Small forces linked with the people to become strong, while big forces opposed the people and became weak. Subsequently, Sun Yat-sen's bourgeois democratic revolutionaries cooperated with us communists, and together we defeated the warlords set up left behind by Sun Shikai. Chiang Kai-shek's rule of China was recognized by the government of all countries and lasted 22 years, and his forces were the biggest. Our forces were small, 50,000 party members at first, but only a few thousand after counter-revolutionary suppressions. The enemy made trouble everywhere. Again, this law operated. The big and strong ended up in defeat because they are divorced from the people, whereas the small and weak emerge victorious because they are linked with the people and work in their interests. That is how things turned out in the end. During the anti-Japanese war, Japan was very powerful. The Kuomintang troops were driven to the hinterland, and the armed forces led by the Communist Party could only conduct guerrilla warfare in the rural areas behind the enemy lines. Japan occupied large Chinese cities such as Peking, Tainan, Shanghai, Nanking, Wuhan, and Canton. Nevertheless, like Germany's Hitler and the Japanese militarists collapsed within a few years, in accordance with the same law. We underwent innumerable difficulties and were driven from the south to the north. While our forces fell from several hundred thousand strong to a few tens of thousands at the end of the 25,000 Li Long March, we had only 25,000 men left. In the history of the party, many erroneous left and right lines have occurred. Grapus Revolve were the right deviationist line of Chen Chu Hsu and the left deviationist line of Wang Ming. Besides, they were the right deviationist errors committed by Chen Kuo Tao, Kao Kang, and others. There's also a good side to mistakes, for they can educate the people and the party. We have had a good many mistakes by negative examples, such as Japan, the United States, Chiang Kai-shek, Chen Su-hsu, Li Lishan, Wang Ming, Chiang Kuo-tao, and Kao Kang. We paid a very high price to learn from these teachers by negative example in the past. Britain made war on us many times. Britain, the United States, Japan, France, Germany, Italy, Tsarist Russia, and Holland were all very interested in this land of ours. They were all our teachers by negative example, and we were their pupils. During the War of Resistance, our troops grew and became 900,000 strong through fighting against Japan. Then came the War of Liberation. Our arms were inferior to those of the Kuomintang. The Kuomintang troops were numbered 4 million, but in 3 years of fighting, we wiped out 8 million of them all told. The Kuomintang, through aided by U.S. imperialism, could not defeat us. The big and strong cannot win. It is always the small and weak who will win. Now U.S. imperialism seems quite powerful, but in reality it isn't. It is very weak politically because it is divorced from the masses of the people and is disliked by everyone, and by the American people too. In appearance, it is very powerful, but in reality it is nothing to be afraid of. It is a paper tiger. Outwardly, a tiger is made of paper, unable to withstand the wind and rain. I believe the United States is nothing but a paper tiger. History as a whole, the history of class society for thousands of years, has proved this point. The strong must give way to the weak. This holds true for America as well. Only when imperialism is eliminated can peace prevail. The day will come when the paper tigers will be wiped out. But they won't become extinct of their own accord. They need to be battered by the wind and rain. When we say U.S. imperialism is a paper tiger, we are speaking in terms of strategy. Regarding it as a whole, we must despise it. But regarding each part, we must take it seriously. It has claws and fangs. We have to destroy it piecemeal. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Book Club Commune. Next episode, we will be getting into On Contradictions. On Contradictions is like 35 pages, so that's why I did these three short works now instead. And it is really taxing on my throat and voice to do that much right now. So it's just going to take a while for me to find time and rest up so I'm able to do it. But it is coming soon. After we read On Contradictions by Mao, I'm going to be taking a little quick break from Mao to read Concerning the Economic Problems of Socialism in the USSR by Stalin. Reason is that I want to read Mao's critiques and him talking about that. But I don't feel like I can properly read and talk about Mao criticizing Stalin here if we don't have the comparison to what Mao is critiquing. So after On Contradiction, it's going to be a short mini-series of me going through Stalin's Concerning the Economic Problems of Socialism in the USSR, and then we're going to get into Mao's Concerning Stalin's Economic Problems of Socialism in the USSR, and then Mao's critiquing of it, which are two separate works, Concerning and Critiquing. So those will be coming sooner rather than later, I hope. Again, there's no telling. I hope you've enjoyed this episode, though. Please like and share. I know lots of people really need to hear Combat Liberalism, and I personally enjoyed reading U.S. Imperialism is a Paper Tiger, and The Chinese People Will Not Be Cowed by the Atom Bomb. I thought those were really nice, uplifting works, really positive. So I think this is a good episode. I hope you all enjoy it. Share it around. Give it to people. Who cares anymore? Solidarity forever, and keep on reading.